page. So welcome all of you to this fourth day for seminar, fourth day for course. Yesterday we discussed about the science of God, the proof of existence of God. And while discussing about the proof of existence of God, we discussed about how the whole society is divided into atheism, atheistic society and theistic society. So the atheistic society and theistic society, though they call themselves atheists or theists, but neither of them have any proper idea about God. We discussed how God exists by the science, by the same use of science. Because the science has taken a lead role to prove that God doesn't exist. Now yesterday we, by logic, understood how God exists, how by there is something called organization in this world. If there is an organization, there should be an organizer behind it. If there is a design in this world, there should be a designer behind it. And the world has been created, so there should be a creator behind it. While discussing all these things, we came to the conclusion that God is there and He is one. Though God is there and He is one, why there are different religions that also discussed. The different religions are there not because of different gods. It is because of different kinds of audience. And for a very mature and advanced audience whose senses are very much under control and think of the benefit of the society, Sanatana Dharma gives the entire understanding of all the religious principles. And then we discuss that how, even though God is one, why we have to accept God in our life. The real reason for accepting God in our life should not be out of fear, should not be out of expectation, not just out of duty, but it should be out of love. Because this love is the only thing which we are all aspiring for. Right from birth, we are just seeking out where I can get love, where I can get love. And the only person who can fill our hearts, which is longing for love, is God. And that is the reason we need to accept God in our life. And we discuss the word Sanatana Dharma. To love is the nature of the soul. Dharma means nature. So what is the dharma of the soul? It is to love and serve. And what is Sanatana Dharma? The Sanatana Dharma is the eternal religious principle. To eternally love the Supreme Lord, that is the nature of the soul. And when we forget loving God, then we start loving somebody else. And when it doesn't get satisfied with loving somebody, we go to somebody. In this way, ultimately, in one sense, if you see, everybody is searching for God only. Everybody. Because they are trying to find out, I love you, you love me. Then after some time you say, no. It's a wrong choice. Let me go to another one. It's a wrong choice. Let me go to another one. In this way, we go on searching the object of love, and that can only come to a full stop when we come to Krishna, the Supreme Lord. So then we say that God, we have to love Him. If we have to love God, then we should know who is He. Then, yesterday we discussed about the definition of God, rather the preliminary definition of God. The preliminary definition of God is that God is Sarva Karana Karana. Sarva Karana Karana means what? He is the cause of all causes. Like if you go on asking, where did you come from? You say, I came from my father. Where did you come? Your father come from? His father. Where did his father come from? He came from his father. Where did his father come from? In this way, go on asking, there will be a source from whom all the fathers came. The father of all fathers, the cause of all causes. That is why Lord is defined as a cause of all causes. Sometimes people say, if God created everybody, who created him? But it is a wrong question, because by definition, God is one who doesn't have a creator by himself, and he is a creator for everyone. He is a beginning for everyone. He doesn't himself have any beginning. That is why Anadiradira Govinda Sarva Karana Karana. Lord Brahma describes the Brahma Samhita as Anadir Adir. He himself doesn't have any beginning. Rather, he is the beginning for everyone. Anadir Adir Govinda. Now, after defining God as one who is the source of everything, we discussed about how God is understood at three levels. Some people say God is everywhere. And some people say God is in everybody's heart. And some people say God is in the spiritual world. And yesterday we learned that how all the three things are true. How it can be true? We understood it by an example of sun. The sun is at one place, but it is making its presence felt everywhere in the form of sunshine. The sun is at one place and is emitting a rays, sun rays. Sun rays are emitted throughout the world. So how is sun presence felt everywhere? In the form of sunshine. At the same time, the sun is reflected in every pot of water we keep under it. You go on an open ground and keep different pots of water, you find the sun is reflected in every pot of water. So in this way, sun is making its presence felt everywhere, all-pervading feature that is known as sunshine. And the sun is there in every pot of water in the form of reflection. The same way, God is everywhere in the form of Brahman. God is everywhere in everybody's heart as Paramatma. And the same God is there in the spiritual world as Bhagavan. So once we have this concept clear of Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan, the Brahman feature, the absolute truth, is in the spiritual world. The Brahman expands himself into the Supreme Lord. Bhagavan expands himself into Paramatma in everybody's heart. The same Bhagavan, he is spread everywhere in the form of Brahman. So if somebody says God is everywhere, he is addressing what feature of the absolute truth? Addressing the Brahman feature of the absolute truth. If somebody says God is in everybody's heart, he is referring to what? The Paramatma feature of the absolute truth. But if somebody says God is everywhere, he is right. But there is one problem with it. What is the problem? The problem is that he is not completely right. He is right, at the same time not completely right. Because he doesn't understand that there is a Bhagavan who is there in the spiritual world, who is source of this Brahman. If somebody just knows the sunshine, doesn't know the sun, that means he doesn't have complete knowledge of the sun. Complete knowledge of God is only when you understand who is this Bhagavan. Yesterday we also had this discussion about how God is having a form or God is not having a form. And we came to know that how God has form at the same time, he doesn't have form. Now when you say God doesn't have form, we are referring to what? We are referring to the Brahman feature of the absolute truth. Like the sun has form, but the sunshine doesn't have form. So this material energy of the Lord, the energy of the Lord doesn't have any form. Whereas the Lord himself, who is energetic, he is having a beautiful form. So some people say, oh, you people, you worship some form, but God doesn't have any form. But actually, when they say God doesn't have any form, they're not wrong, but they're not completely right too. Why? Because they should know that God is formless in the feature of Brahman, and God is having a beautiful form in the form of Bhagavan. So Bhagavan has form, Brahman doesn't have form. Like for example, I lift this kartal, sir. Now, who lifted this kartal? I lifted it through my energy. Now, I have a form, whereas my energy doesn't have any form. You have a generator, the energetic generator has a form. But the electricity produced by the generator doesn't have any form. It is very simple. There is a big fight going on between people who say God has form, and we worship the form and the deity. And some people say, oh, it doesn't have any form. You people are worshipping just stone, God doesn't have any form. But there is no quarrel between them when they understand Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan feature of the absolute truth. All the contradictions are harmonized very nicely in absolute truth. So God is having form, at the same time it doesn't have form. But there should be proper understanding behind when we say God doesn't have form. There should be proper understanding when we say God has a form. When people say God has form, we should understand God doesn't have a material form. The scriptures, they talk about God not having form also. And scriptures talk about God having a form also. And this is a very interesting thing to note, how both are right. Some people say, oh, These are very confusing statements. Some people take one statement one extreme, other statement other extreme, and both fight. And some people say shun off with these two things because it's very confusing. But it is not confusing. Neither we should go to two extreme. We should know how both are right. When scriptures are saying God doesn't have form, it is referring to the Brahman feature, the absolute truth, the all-pervading feature of the absolute truth, that is energy. And when the scriptures talk about God having form, it is talking about what? Talking about the Bhagavan feature of the absolute truth, from whom the Brahman manifests, from whom the Paramatma manifests. Now some people even say, God is just some energy. No, God is not just some energy. God is energetic. So there is energetic and there is energy. The energy emanates from the energetic. So some people who have limited vision, they can only perceive God as some energy. There is nothing wrong with them. They are right, but they are not completely right. Complete understanding the absolute truth is when you come to the point of understanding who is this Bhagavan. What is the definition of Bhagavan? Brahman, we know, is all-pervading. Paramatma, we know, is in everybody's heart. They are the lower understandings of the absolute truth. But the highest understanding of the absolute truth is when you understand Bhagavan. Now let us understand this term Bhagavan. It is a very simple word. Bhagavan. Bhag means Bhagya. We said a Bhagyavan. It is Bhagavan. One who has got all the Bhaga. Bhaga means opulences. Bhaga means qualities. So there are six qualities which are present in Bhagavan in full. What are the six qualities? Number one. According to Parashara, he says, Aishwaryascha samakrascha siyascha yasascha. Aishwarya. Lord Bhagavan means he should be all rich. Nobody should be as rich as him and nobody should be more richer than him. This is first. The second one, he should be beautiful. Nobody should be as beautiful as him and there should be nobody more beautiful than him. This is Bhagavan's definition. Whoever fits into his definition, they can be called Bhagavan. Number one is what? Nobody should be as rich as him and nobody should be more richer than him. Number two, nobody should be as beautiful as him and nobody should be more beautiful than him. The third quality is he should be, Bhagavan means one who is having all knowledge. That means nobody should have as much as knowledge he has, nobody should have more knowledge than him. This is the third quality. The fourth one, strength. He should be all powerful and he should be all famous, the fifth one. And sixth one is he should be all renounced. So these are the six qualities of Bhagavan. Anybody who has these six qualities in full, that means natat samasya vyadikastu drishyate. Nobody should be tat samaha, nobody should be equal to him, nobody tat adhikaha. Nobody should be superior to him, more than him in these qualities. But we find in this world, we also have these six qualities. But we cannot claim, I am all beautiful. Even if you claim that I am all beautiful, okay, you claim, I am the most beautifulest person, Miss Universe, you may say. Okay, but the next year, the Miss Universe of the previous year comes and crowns the Miss Universe of this year. Then you'll be shocked to see, was she the Miss Universe of the previous year? 1 year is enough. Gone, all the beauty gone. Somebody may say, I am all rich. But how long he can be rich? Some people may have beauty but not riches. Some people may have riches but not knowledge. Some people may have knowledge but not fame. So we want the best of the two worlds. Everything we want best. But it doesn't happen always. Like once it so happened that there was a beauty queen at once upon a time. Her name was Marilyn Monroe. Most of you must be knowing her. And at the same time, there was one very intelligent person who was a great author, Bernard Shaw. So both were well known around the world, one for his intelligence, one for beauty. One day, it's a real thing, it's a real story. One day, they both of them met in a party. So then, Marilyn Monroe came and Bernard, told Bernard Shaw, Bernard Shaw at the time was quite old and she was quite angry. She told Bernard Shaw that, "I want to marry you." Bernard Shaw was shocked and told, why you want to marry me? You're so beautiful, I'm so ugly, why you want to get married to me?" Then she told that, "When we get married, we can have a child who is as intelligent as you are and as beautiful as I am." Then Bernard Shaw told, "Very wonderful, but only afraid if the reverse happens." Somebody becomes as intelligent as you are. So we expect the best of the two worlds. It doesn't work like that. You may have one as one thing, you may have don't have another thing. But Bhagavan is one who has everything. He possesses everything, including renunciation. This is one very special quality. In spite of Bhagavan being all rich, he is all renounced. In spite of Bhagavan being all beautiful, he is all renounced. You know, we have little bit money, we become so proud about it. Yeah, I am so rich, I am so beautiful, we want to show off. This is the speciality of Bhagavan, that means you don't have renunciation. Whereas Bhagavan is one who has, one who in spite of having all beauty, all rich, all strength, all fame, all renunciation, all riches, still he is all renounced. So that is the speciality of Bhagavan. So that means Bhagavan is one who has got these six qualities in full. Now, let us see. These qualities are there. What is these qualities imply? Whoever has these qualities, qualities imply that there is a personality, and personality implies a person. Actually, a person is recognized through his personality, and a personality is made up of qualities. How you distinguish between two people, two persons? Because two people are different from each other because they are different set of qualities. Naturally, we say, "Oh, he is a very beautiful person." That means his personality is being recognized through what? Through his qualities. So the more development of qualities happen, the personality also develops and he becomes a better person. So the more rich you are, the more better personality you have, and the more better person you become, more beauty you have, more strength you have. In this way, whoever has the six qualities, he has a personality. If he has a personality, he is a person. Now, by definition, Bhagavan is one who has got these six qualities. If Bhagavan has these six qualities, then he has a personality. If Bhagavan has a personality, then who is Bhagavan? He is a person. As much as you are a person, I am a person, Bhagavan is a person. He is not impersonal. He is not just impersonal light. You're just sitting like that, you go in front of him, he just closes his eyes, you just do close your eyes and come back. No. He is a person full of emotions. Like how do you recognize a person? He has got emotions. Every person has an emotion, isn't it? So God, Bhagavan, is one who is full of emotions. Like sometimes you find people who come in front of God and then close their eyes. Just imagine, once it so happened that I was there in the temple chanting my mantras. I was just walking in the temple and chanting my mantras. At the time, one family came. So, they just got down from the car, entered the temple. I just casually asked them, I welcomed them and said, "So, where are you coming from?" They told, "We are coming from one place which was very far away from the temple, about 50 kilometers away from the temple." So I was very surprised. Even those who stay next to the temple, they don't come. "You came all the way 50 kilometers from that place. Thank you very much." And I called them again. They stood in front of the Supreme Lord. They stood in front of the deities. As soon as they stood in front of the deities, the elderly person who told me, "We came all the way to have darshan." As soon as he came in front of the deities, he closed his eyes. I was just wondering, just now he told, "I came to have darshan," and he came all the way 50 kilometers driving, and he just in front of the deity, what is doing? Closing his eyes. It is because the impersonal conception of the Absolute, impersonal conception of the Supreme Lord. Just imagine, your friend comes many kilometers flying and he came to meet you. He knocks the door, you open the door. And then, as soon as you open the door, he closes his eyes. How awkward you feel, isn't it? Why is he closing his eyes? If you know that you are his friend, then he should open his eyes, you talk, how are you? There should be some interaction. And then you go and ask that person, you see, why have you closed your eyes? I am meditating. On whom? The Supreme Lord. Right? Is he in front of you? Just imagine, when your friend closes your eyes, he asks, why have you closed your eyes? I am meditating on you. How bad you feel, isn't it? So you are in front and he is meditating on you. So, it is because of impersonal understanding of the Absolute Truth. God is a person. He is full of emotions. Actually, whatever emotions, what we experience in our life, it is all there just because God has these emotions in perfectness. To give you a small example, I still remember in my childhood, I used to stay in the railway colony in Mysore. Every house was quite big and each house had big, big mango trees. And all the children, we all used to get together and go to one specific house, which was the biggest house in the entire colony. There was a big officer there. And there, we used to throw stones and then get the mangoes. In everybody's house, mangoes are like abundant. They are rotting. But still, we all would go to that house and then get the mangoes, and sometimes when you throw the stones, the servants would break the window panes, and the old woman would come and shout at us. And we would somehow gather what all mangoes we could get, and then run. And there was some special pleasure of stealing mangoes of somebody's house and eating them, in spite of mangoes rotting in your house. Now tell me, where is this emotion coming from? Where is this coming from? This experience of that emotion, originally it is present in God, that is why we have it. Originally it is present in Him. Even emotions like this, you name emotion. Everything, whatever we experience in this world, it is just because God has the experience in perfectness. The only difference is, the emotions what we experience in this world is only a perverted reflection. That's the reason. That is the only difference. But originally, all the emotions are present in perfectness. Raso vaisaha. Akhila rasam brata murtihi. That is how the scriptures describe that God is completely filled with emotions. As much as you like to play. Why? God doesn't like to play at what? The very fact that we have a liking to play, it is because God has us. Bhagavan has a liking to play. Like we like to sing and dance, isn't it? Now why we like to sing and dance? Because the liking of singing and dancing was originally present in perfectness in Bhagavan. Isn't it? So, it shows that Bhagavan is a person. He is not impersonal. Let us come back to our original discussion. Bhagavan is one who has got the six qualities in full. Now, let us discuss one more point about the qualities. What do we do with these qualities? With these qualities, what we do? We attract. Whoever has these qualities more, they become more attractive. If somebody is more rich, they become more attractive. Somebody is more beautiful, they become very attractive. And the film stars, they are very beautiful. So that is why they attract many people. Somebody is very knowledgeable, they become very attractive. Somebody is very renounced, some people are very much renounced, they also become very attractive. So actually, every quality in itself has an attractive feature in it. The more we possess these qualities, the more attractive we become. That is why, to the extent we have these qualities, to that extent we become attractive. Now Bhagavan has been defined as what? As one who is having all the qualities in full. If he has all the qualities in full, by definition, Bhagavan means one who has all the qualities in full. If qualities attract, then Bhagavan is what? All attractive. Because qualities attract. Now we have this much of beauty, this much attractive. God has all beauty, so He is all attractive. God has all strength, He is all attractive. God has all famous, He is all famous, that is why He is all attractive. Now in this world we also try to become attractive by trying to become famous, trying to become beautiful. But God naturally, Bhagavan means one who has all the six qualities in full. So by definition, Bhagavan is all attractive. Now, what is that one word in Sanskrit which means all attractive? Bhagavan is all attractive. And what is that one word in Sanskrit which means all attractive?
Krishna.
Karshayati. Krishbuvachaka shabdaha. Karshayati means, if you see, the English word is also having a similar sound. Attraction. Krishna. Can you sign some similar sound? And even the Hindi word, akarshan. Karshayati. Krishdhatu. From the Krishdhatu, everything comes. That is why Krishna means all attractive. And Bhagavan is all attractive. Then who is Bhagavan?
Krishna.
Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. By simple definition, if you say with the word Bhagavan, the word Bhagavan can only be used to Krishna and nobody else. Because by definition, Bhagavan means all attractive. All attractive means Krishna. So Bhagavan is Krishna. If A equal to B, B equal to C, and A equal to C. It is simple mathematics, simple logic. That is why Srimad Bhagavatam says, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. These words are used in Srimad Bhagavatam to explain that the word Bhagavan can only be used in context with Krishna and nobody else other than. Bhagavat Shabdam Ekashrayamaha. Ekashrayamaha means the Bhagavat Shabda, the word Bhagavan, can only be used to Krishna and nobody else. Some people may say, oh, you people are from ISKCON, that is why you say Krishna is Bhagavan. If you go to some other satsang, they say somebody is Bhagavan. If you go to some other place, they say Bhagavan. But why do you believe somebody? Why are you to believe me also? Let us talk about Bhagavad Gita. In Bhagavad Gita, in every page, what is written whenever Krishna speaks? Shri Bhagavan Uvacha. That itself is a proof. Krishna spoke Gita and it is written Bhagavan Uvacha. Then who is Bhagavan? Krishna is Bhagavan. Srimad Bhagavatam says, Lord Brahma says in Brahma Samhita, Ishwara Paramaha Krishna. There may be many controllers, but Parameshwara is Krishna. All the scriptures, they are talking about establishing Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, we discuss how Krishna is supreme. By saying that how he is the source of everything, Sarva Karana Karanam. Not only is he supreme, but he is a person. Sometimes people think God is impersonal because He is supreme. Just because Krishna is supreme, that doesn't make Him impersonal. Rather, supremacy of Krishna is not a disqualification for Him to be a person. He is a supreme. He is not only just supreme, He is a supreme person. Now, let us see, when Krishna appeared, when He did pastimes, He showed that He is Bhagavan. How He showed? He manifested all the opulences, the six qualities. The first quality, as we discussed, is Aishwarya, riches. In Dwaraka, Krishna had 16,108 wives. We know one itself is so difficult. And for each wife, He had a palace. And all the servants and all the wives were completely satisfied. And they used to wear 10 saris a day. Jerry saris a day, and they would not wear the same sari once worn. Just imagine, 16,108 into 10, then every day. Just imagine. The whole world, everything belongs to Krishna. He showed His opulence and He's all rich. And next is beauty. The gopis criticize Brahma. They say, what kind of creator you are? You don't know how to create because you have created the winking of the eyes. when we wink up, when we wink our eyes at that time, at that split of the second, we are not able to drink the beauty of Krishna. He is Madana Mohana. The entire beauty put together of this world put together is that of God of love, Cupid, Cupid's beauty. And Krishna is Madana Mohana. Even Cupid becomes attracted to Krishna. Kandarpa Koti Kamaniya Vishesha Shobham. Koti, millions and millions of Cupid put together, that beauty cannot be equal to the beauty of Krishna. And now what to speak of just beauty? Fame. Just see people, what all people do to become famous, isn't it? They try to somehow get the attention of people. For that they do all kinds of things. But Krishna is stealing butter, that's all. Simple activity, childish activity, stealing butter. When did he do? 5,000 years back. Still we talk about it. It is not that, you know, it's a big thing, great thing, and we are talking about it. Simple activity of stealing butter, he did 5,000 years back without advertisement, without publishing in the newspaper. People talk about it, isn't it? What to speak of devotees? You may say only devotees talk about it, only foolish people, sentimental devotees, you talk about it. But the point is the whole world talks about it. Either they talk about that Krishna did it or did not do, but our talk is about Krishna only, isn't it? The most famous person in the entire existence till date is God only. Because those who accept him, those who are devotees, they talk about him anyhow. Those who are not devotees, they also talk that he doesn't exist. Ultimately, talk is about whom? It is him only, na? So that he is the most famous person. The most strength. 7-year-old boy, Krishna, he lifted Govardhan for 7 days and 7 nights with a little finger. And how did he lift it? Playfully lifted it. Not like our weightless lifters. They are doing all kinds of things and they wait for a few seconds and then drop it. And they make so many sounds, like that, and put it down. But not only that, when Krishna lifted the Govardhan, it was not the muscles were coming out. See, he is Saumya Babu. His whole body was as soft as butter. It was very soft. It is Komalangam. Full whole body is Komala. Very soft. It is not that he has got some 6 abs or something like that. His body was very soft. That is strength actually. So, Krishna, he is his strength. And in spite of all these things, he is so renounced. When he appeared with Lord Ramachandra, just his father did not even order him. It was just if he doesn't go to forest, his father's word cannot be kept. That's all. He was just to be crowned the king of the entire world. Ayodhya was the capital of the entire world at the time. And he just walked into the forest. It is not that, 14 years, what I'm going to do, anyhow, I would have been the king. Oh, my father, why do you go give my, your word to Kaikeyi? Not like crying and going. The same smiling face was there, the same smile was on the face of Ram. When he was walking to the forest, the same smiling face. No disturbance at all. We lose few hundred rupees on the way to the courts or way to the temple or somewhere. Oh, we always think about, oh, I lost it. It's totally renounced. All knowledge. See, Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita for 5,000 years back. Till now, there is not even a single book which is challenging it. So many books were printed. Nobody talks about it now. After a few years, if at all they are lucky, it'll few years. Just few months, they are forgotten. Nobody talks about it. Since 5,000 years, this Bhagavad Gita has been the guiding source of thousands and thousands and millions of people in the world, and still it continues to be. Can there be any better book of knowledge than this? And Krishna spoke, so is the most knowledgeable person. Not only that, Krishna says, Vedam smritani vartamanani jarjuna vishyamish bhutani vamtuvidam kaschana. He says, I know the past, present and future of every living entity, everyone. That is the knowledge of Krishna. And he proved to the world when he appeared that he has all the 6 opulences, and that shows Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. Especially when you speak this particular subject of establishing Krishna, Supreme Lord Bhagavan, especially when you speak it in front of the Indian audience, they always think, Prabhuji, till yesterday the course was very nice, but this I cannot accept. Because I have been worshipping so many people, Durga, Shiva, why are you telling only Krishna is God? Who are they? This is not good. You should see everybody equally. Everybody is equally, you should see. This is not good. This is really not acceptable. So, this thing, it is very difficult for the Indian audience to accept. So, generally, once we understand Krishna's Supreme Personality of Godhead, we should know that how many gods are there? How many gods are there?
One.
How many Bhagavans are there?
One.
Now, how many Devi Devatas are there? There are 33 crore. There are two understandings of it. I'll talk about it later. That means there are 33 crore. There are so many. That shows that there is a distinction between Bhagavan and the demigods or the Devi Devatas. The Devi Devatas are who? They are actually subservient to the Supreme Lord, subservient to Bhagavan. Though we know this, but it becomes very difficult for us to accept. Because of our condition, because of our ignorance. Everybody knows that there is one Bhagavan and there are many Devatas. So, we should try to know the distinction between Bhagavan and the Devatas. Of course, we cannot talk about all 33 crore of them. We will talk about few who are very prominent, and especially Navratri is happening. Generally, always I talk about Ganesh first. Since Navratri is happening, we'll talk about Durga first. So Durga, who is Durga? So she is very famous, and especially as soon as we hear about Durga, we go and ask, we have a list. I want this, I want this, I want this, Durga Devi, please give me. That is why people worship Durga a lot. So let us understand who is Durga and what is her connection with Krishna. It is said in the Brahma Samhita that Durga Devi, she is the potency of Krishna. Srishti sthiti pralaya sadhana shakti rega chayai vayasya bhuvanal vibharti Durga. Ichchanurupam api asya yatheshrute sa govinda madhi purusham tamaham bhajami. Now Brahma, he says in the Brahma Samhita that Srishti sthiti pralaya sadhana shakti rekha. One, Durga is one who takes care of creation, maintenance and destruction at a particular level, and she is shakti rekha. She is shakti of Krishna. What kind of shakti of Krishna? She is a shadow potency of Krishna. Chayaiva yasya bhuvanani vibharti Durga. And now, what does she do? Ichchanurupam api yasya cheshtatesa. Her cheshta, her activities are exactly according to the ichcha of Krishna, according to the desire of Krishna. Now, you have many, many forms of Durga. We have Navadurga, Navalakshmi, so many things. But there is one special form of Durga you must be knowing about it. She is exactly sitting in the Himalayas, in the top of India. Who is she? Vaishnavi, Vaishnavi Devi. You must have heard about it, isn't it? So who is she, Vaishnavi? She is a form of Durga. And what is one of the names of Durga? It is Vaishnavi. And what is the meaning of Vaishnava? A devotee of? So if Durga is Vaishnavi, who is she? A devotee of Vishnu. By her name itself, you can understand that she is a devotee of Vishnu. She is a devotee of Krishna. By her name itself, she is not some independent goddess. She is Chaya potency of Krishna. She is such a qualified person that Krishna has appointed her to take care of the entire material world. Entire material world is taken care by her like a mother. And what does a mother do? Mother takes care of the child very nicely. She nourishes the child. Whatever the child requires, she gives. At the same time, what does a mother do? Isn't it? Gives beatings also. Both she does. And that is why Durga, we say, Ma, Ma, at the same time she has a Trishul also. Isn't it? So, you say, Ma, Ma, at the same time she has a Trishul. And what does Trishul indicate? Adhyatmik kleshas, adhibhautik kleshas, and adhidevaka kleshas. The misery is given by other living entities unto us. That is known as adhibhautik kleshas. Adhyatmik kleshas, the misery is because of our own body and mind. And sometimes you are alone, still you are... Everything is first class. Air condition is there, everything is there, but you feel frustrated. No cause, no, just because of your body and mind you are frustrated. And sometimes others give you trouble, like the living entities, and mosquitoes, and some people around you, they give you trouble, adhibhautik kleshas. And ultimately there is adhidaiva, tsunami comes, earthquake comes, adhidaiva, because they are designed with the demigods. So these Trishula, the three points indicate these three kinds of miseries. She is giving miseries. You may say, why Durga is giving miseries to me? For that I tell you a small story. It's a real thing. Many, many years back, if you really remember, in Gujarat, in Bhuj, there was a big earthquake. Some of you must be remembering, some of you might not be knowing it. Huge earthquake. Then from our temple, because our temple has mostly Gujarati congregation, so our ISKCON leaders, they requested to send Gujarati congregation speakers and to go there and give lectures. And a team of doctors and nurses, they went. And our one more team of cooking staff went, about 500 devotees went there. Then what happened, there was one doctor's team who were taking care of the wounded people. And there was one team who were cooking khichdi and different things, they were feeding. And there was one team who were doing kirtan and giving lectures. So it was a grand success. Even though many organizations came for food relief and medical relief. But this was something unique. Because everything is gone. Now even though they are treated, they require some entertainment or this. They require to hear something. Because they are so emotionally depressed. No medicines can cure their emotional depression. No amount of food can clear their emotional depression. It is only spiritual knowledge can do. That is why the local people there, the government, they became very happy. Because people, though there were many organizations trying to give some physical aid and all, but ISKCON programs became very successful. And once, it so happened that I had gone only for 2 days because I was very busy. And there one devotee was giving lecture in Gujarati. It was a village where the entire village was gone down. And there was only one temple of Durga there. And after the lecture, one old man asked a question. He told, in our village, everybody is a devotee. They don't start their work without going to the temple of Durga Devi. She is our mother. Then why she became so cruel today to us? There is no family there which had no debts. At least one person died in every family in that village. It was a very drastic situation there. I was sitting there in the class. When he asked the question, I'll tell you in Hindi because it doesn't come properly in English. Then he asked, Ma, itna mere hamare par kyon krodhit ho gayi? Then the speaker, he answered saying, Agar pitaji ka baat nahi manoge, ma chata nahi maregi. If you don't hear to the father's words, do you think the mother will be silent? She'll slap you. So that is why Durga, she has Trishul. When you don't listen to your father Krishna, when you don't read Bhagavad Gita, when you don't follow the instructions in Bhagavad Gita, once, twice, thrice the mother will be patiently taking care of you. But what happens if you don't hear? Once, she gets angry and gives a slap. And that is called tsunami. That is called earthquake. That is called all the miseries which we are experiencing. That is called the diseases. It is all gone. It is slap of Durga for not listening to Krishna. And that is how Durga, she is giving miseries to make us understand that this world is just like a prison. Try to get out of it. Let us go deeper into Durga. Somehow some Durga avish has come to me, I suppose. I am speaking long about Durga during Navratri. Now, why Durga is called Durga? Durga is called Durga because Durga, Durgama. This world is called Durg. This material world is called Durg. Why it is called Durg? Durga means Dur plus Gama. Dur means very difficult. Gama means to run away from, get out of, or walk. So the place from which it is very difficult to get out of, that is known as Durga. A fort is called Durga. Why? Because once the fort gates are closed, it's very difficult to get out of it. A jail is also called Durga. Why? Because it is very difficult to get out of the jail. Durgama. Gama iti means to walk, to get out of. So, this material world is also called Durga or Durga. Because it is very difficult to get out of this material world, to attain liberation. And that is why Durga is called Durga. Because she is in charge of the fort of this material world. The jail of this material world. She is in charge of Durga. That is why she is called Durga. Like a jail superintendent. What does the jail superintendent want? The jail superintendent, in spite of he or she taking care of all the people in the jail, the purpose is she wants, or the jail superintendent wants, that people should get out of the jail. They should behave nicely in the jail. Once they see you are nicely behaving, even though you are supposed to stay for 14 years, 3-4 years also if you behave nicely, you are let out. But what we have made, we want to make this jail very comfortable. That is the problem. Just imagine, if somebody is in the jail and is thinking of how to stay nicely, comfortably in the jail, then Durga also becomes fed up. I tell a story regarding this. You know, there was one very, she's still there, she's retired, very efficient police officer, Kiran Bedi, you know her very well. She always gets transferred because she is very efficient police officer. No politician wants that. So ultimately they gave her in charge of Tihar jail. So Tihar jail is a very prominent jail in India. So now she became so efficient in charge, the superintendent of the jail, that she made system so nice that all the jailers were given proper breakfast, proper lunch, proper dinner. Sometimes one or two would not get, she would personally cook and give. And they used to go work in a particular way, and the health, hygiene, everything was taken care of very nicely. And after some time, some jailers were released. They went home, and after some time they came back and told that we want to come and join your jail again. Then she told, I cannot do that because until unless you have a court order. We don't know. You're like mother. Our house is more horrible than the jail. Because then the government had a big problem. People don't want to go out of the jail. Because she made the jail so nice. Nobody wants to get out of it. It is foolishness. Though you make this jail comfortable, but you're not free. Isn't it? So that is what Durga wants. That we all should get out of this world. If you remember the very first day, I spoke about two kinds of knowledge in the Vedas. One is how to live in this world, and the other is how to get out. And Durga wants us to get out of this world by taking shelter of Krishna. So that is what is her desire. So now we spoke enough about Durga. Now we will talk about Ganesha. And you know, Ganesha is the first person whom we are supposed to talk about. Let us talk about Ganesha. Vinayaka, Ganesha. Who is he? Lord Brahma, in Brahma Samhita, he talks about Ganesha. He says, Yat pada pallavaikam vinidhayakam vatande pradamasmaye sranadi raja vignar vihantu vanamasya jagatrayasya govindamadipurisham tamaham bhajami. He says, vignan vihant manavat jagatrayascha. In all the three worlds, people who want to do material progress, Ganesha is the one who removes obstacles. That is why he is known as Vigneshwar. Now what is he doing? Yatpada pallava yugam vinidhaya kumbha. His kumbha, his head, vinidhaya, is keeping it down. Where? At the feet of Krishna. He is bowing down at the feet of Krishna. Yatpada pallava yugam vinidhaya kumbha dvandve pranamasmaye sa ganadi raja. He is ganadi raja. Now let us see and understand the form of Ganesha. It's a very unique form, isn't it? And he has got a human body and elephant head. So actually Ganesha, how he appeared, there's a nice description. There are many scriptures talk different descriptions, but I'm talking about a description of the present Ganesha. The present Ganesha, his appearance happened like this. One day Parvati was alone and she wanted a baby boy who would be like very beautiful and would take care of the house when Shiva is not in his house. So from her body she took Chandan and made a beautiful form, beautiful baby. And he was a young boy, not a baby kind of person, young boy, made and then gave life. And he was very powerful and she gave all the strength to him. And she told him, I am going to take bath, don't allow anybody inside. So Ganesha stood outside the house and Parvati is inside. By the time Lord Shiva came inside, Ganesha stopped him, you cannot go inside. Oh, Shiva told, what is this? Who are you to not allow me inside my own house? I don't know who you are. My mother has ordered me not to allow anybody. Then Lord Shiva told, your mother? Who is she? It's my house. Okay, even if you consider my wife Parvati to be your mother, I'm a husband, I can go any time. Ganesha told, no, there's a big fight. Ganesha told, if you want to really go, fight with me and then go, defeat me and then go. Lord Shiva and Ganesha picked up a fight. And the fight was so severe that Lord Shiva was thinking, oh, he's as powerful as I am. And he finished off all his astras. And Ganesha also was fighting so powerfully. Then Lord Shiva, he told Ganesha, I am very pleased, my dear son. You are like my son, you are so powerful. Allow me inside. Whatever blessing you want, you can take from me. Ganesha told, stop all these talks, fight with me. Then Lord Shiva became very angry and told, you know this Trishula? I don't know so many things. You want to fight? You throw anything, I'll throw another astra. Trishula became very angry and threw his Trishula and Ganesha head got cut off. By the time Parvati came and she saw, oh, you killed your own son, and she started crying. Just knowing. Wife starts crying, then what happens to the husband? And Shiva was like, he was not knowing what to do now. He's going out of the house, inside the house, and by the time the Bhutaganas came, they were also jumping up and down. And Lord Shiva told, do something to the Bhutaganas. The Bhutaganas told, okay, don't worry, we'll go. So they started. Shiva told, whoever you find, the first living entity, cut off their head and bring. It's emergency now. So now Bhutaganas started walking towards, went to the northern direction. In Kailash, they would start going towards northern direction. So there, they found what? No. That is what people think. They found an elephant. It's actually not an elephant. They found a Vinayaka Yoni. Like you have Yaksha, Gandharvas, Kinnaras, Kimpurushas. They are a little bit higher than human beings. In the little bit range, a little higher range than human beings, there are some Yoni called Vinayaka Yoni. There are millions and millions of Vinayakas. Their human body, they have a human body and elephant head. That is how they look like. So that time, the Vinayakas, they both leave the body. They both die. At that time, they cut the head of Vinayaka, one of the Vinayakas, and brought, and then kept it on Ganesha's head. Now, Ganesha got elephant head. Now, when Ganesha got elephant head, he would be very happy. And Ganesha was the most happiest person. Why? Because there is a form of Vishnu called Vishvakshena, who is the presiding deity of Ganesha. Ganesha is there, but above Ganesha, in the Vaikuntha, there is a special form of Krishna called Vishvakshena, who has elephant head. So Ganesha became very happy. Oh, I got the same form as much as my Supreme Lord has. And not only that, this Ganesha has got one more thing, is what? Ekadanta. Only one truth is there, not the other one. Why? Regarding this, many stories are there in the Puranas. But the present Ganesha, you may say, what is this present Ganesha for? Because every time Indra changes, the post of Ganesha also changes. Ganesha is a post, and at present, one special person is occupying the post. He is a liberated soul. What happens is, sometimes some post in this world, in material world, there is no qualified person to occupy the post. Then what happens? Krishna has to send a liberated soul to occupy the post, or he himself had to occupy the post. The present Ganesha, this time, in this day of Brahma, what happened was, there was no qualified person to take care of the post of Ganesha. That is why Krishna had to send a liberated soul. That is why the present Ganesha has four hands, Shankha, Chakra, Gada, Padma. He is a liberated soul. Like sometimes it so happens in our parliament, isn't it? I don't know whether you have the upper house and lower house in Sri Lanka or not. In India you have the upper house and lower house. There is Lok Sabha and there is Rajya Sabha. It is good that Rajagopalachari created this upper house called Rajya Sabha, where all the intelligent people are put there. But generally people are fools. And fools will elect whom? Fools only. And all the ministries, all can be given, but especially the defense, the finance, and the foreign affairs at least. These three things cannot be given to them. Whenever there is real, all fools are elected, then what happens? From Rajya Sabha on deputation they go. Isn't it? In the same way, in the material world, it so happened Ganesha. There was no proper Ganesha who could occupy the post of Ganesh. So Krishna sent a liberated soul. That is why Ganesha Shankar Chikra Kada Padma. I don't know, these days in Ganesh Chaturthi day, sometimes Ganesha holds a guitar. There is one Ganesha with a cricket bat too. And one Ganesha is there on Ananta Sesh. All kinds of things. It's beyond human imagination. Ganesha will be surprised, what is this happening? And they place him on top of a dirty gutter, all the dirty water flows, and they put a stage and they put film songs. And they say, Ganapati Bappa Moriya. Ganesha would think, what is this going on? I will not stay there. Except Ganesh, all the ghosts are there. Shiva's followers are definitely there. Because they like all these things. Something very wonderful. Ganesha will never be there. So, anyhow, on the name of religion, so many things are happening. Let us come back to the point. Ganesha Ekadanta. Once Vyasa, he wanted to write all the Vedic literatures. For that, what happened? All the demigods came and told Vyasa, we have a very humble, very intelligent boy who can do that. Then they sent Ganesha. Ganesha was very happy. Vyasa told that I won't dictate, you have to transcribe, you have to just write it down. It was stenographed, the entire thing. Then Ganesha agreed. But Ganesha told Vyasa that I have a problem. Whatever I do with some condition. Vyasa told, what is the condition? You should dictate to me constantly, without stoppage. Even for a breath, you should not break. I'll write constantly. Yes, even for a split second, even for breathing, if you stop, that will be the end of Mahabharata. Just imagine, Mahabharata ends with Draupadi being disrobed, Krishna not coming, then who will become a devotee of Krishna? So, then it's like, Vyasa told, no problem. Vyasa told, I have a condition. And what was the condition? Vyasa told Ganesha, the condition is, I would speak a verse, you can write down the words only when you understood it. Ganesha told, okay. So Vyasa was coining a verse and Ganesha took some time to understand. Then only he can write, isn't it? By the time Vyasa would take the breath and then would continue. Now the whole thing, agreement happened. Then, now Ganesha was so enthusiastic to write about Krishna. And he did not want to waste time to touch out where is the pen. He just broke his tooth there. And he started writing. Bhojapatras are available there. If you have somebody have been to Padri, still you find some trees, Bhojapatra trees are there, where you can take the tree bark and you can start writing there. Now, one or two trees are only left in Badri. If you go from Badri up, there's Managam, there's Vyasa Gufa there. That is where this past thing happened. Now, coming back to this point of Ganesha, he was a person who wrote Mahabharata, Vyasa was dictating, and the condition was what? That Ganesha would understand and only write. And while dictating Mahabharata, Vyasa dictated what? Bhagavad Gita too. And while Vyasa was dictating Bhagavad Gita, Ganesha understood and wrote. For whom? He wrote it for us. And what we say? Oh Ganesha, eat this Modak. Ganesha is thinking, have you read Gita? I wrote Gita to you and you don't read it. And you see Modak, but wow, I am not interested in Modak, I am interested in you reading Bhagavad Gita. If somebody really wants to worship Ganesha, they have to read Bhagavad Gita. Ganesha wrote Bhagavad Gita for you. Now, Durga Ganesh is only talking about Lord Shiva now, isn't it? Lord Shiva. I heard so much about Lord Shiva as soon as I came to Sri Lanka. Only here a lot of Shivas are there, some devotees started speaking. But who is Lord Shiva? Lord Shiva is Vaishnavanam Yathashambhu, the greatest of the devotees of Krishna. That is why wherever you have a Krishna temple, Vishnu temple, there will be a Shiva temple. Why? Because Lord Shiva is such a great devotee of Lord Vishnu that he is constantly chanting. He is having a Japamala in his hand. Whom is he chanting? What is he chanting? He is chanting the name of Ram. Actually, daily Lord Shiva chants Vishnu Sahasranam. One day Parvati came and asked Lord Shiva, what is this you are chanting? It's so long. I also want to learn, but give me something very short and sweet. Ata kena upayena laguna. She says, laguna. Laguna is something very simple. Because I am a woman, I cannot pronounce this long shloka so long. Simple. Something. Tell something simple for my deliverance. Then, the famous words were spoken by Lord Shiva. Shri Rama Rama Rameti Rame Rame Manorame Sahasranam Tattulyam Rama Nama Varanane Sahasranam Tattulyam Rama Nama Varanane. Oh Varanane, beautiful face Parvati. This Ram Nam, the name of Ram, is equal to 1000 names of Vishnu. And why Ram is called Ram? Because Yogino Ramateyante, one who gives pleasure to the mind of the yogis, that is why it's called Ram. Ram gives pleasure, that is why you should chant the name of Ram. That is enough. If you don't have to chant all 1000 names of Vishnu, just chant Ram, that's enough. Who is telling it? Lord Shiva to Parvati. Now, what more proof is required? That Lord Shiva wants everybody to chant the name of Ram. Everybody, Lord Shiva is actually a personality who is the best speaker of Bhagavatam. Wherever glorification of Krishna is there, there will be definitely an input of Lord Shiva there. The procedure of worship of Lord Krishna has been described by Lord Shiva in the Pancharatri scriptures. Everywhere, wherever description of glorification of the Lord is there, Lord Shiva's input will be there. What is happening in Kailash? Constantly Lord Shiva is singing the glories of the Lord. Kartikeya is dancing and Ganapati, Ganesha, is playing Mridanga and dancing. That is why we say Natti Ganapati. Where, what is he dancing for? He is dancing, Lord Shiva is chanting and with tears rolling through his eyes, and Parvati is in ecstasy seeing all these things, and Kartikeya is playing Kartal and Ganesha is playing Mridanga in ideal family. See, an ideal family, this is what it is. Lord Shiva is showing to the entire world how a family should be. One son is playing mridanga, the husband is singing in ecstasy, the wife is also seeing all these people and she is stunned. So this is how Lord Shiva conducts life in Kailash. He is constantly chanting the names of Krishna. And so much can be spoken about Lord Shiva, but we are running out of time. So we will talk something about now Brahma. Brahma himself. Brahma has been described in about himself in Brahma Samhita. Lord Brahma says, He says, Bhasvan Itashmasakalesh Nijishkeja, Swiyam Kir Prakadi, Tadudatra, Brahma, Yesh, Jagatan, Vidana Karta, Govindaman Purusham, Tamam Bachami. Brahma says, I'm like a diamond. And I'm shining in front of everyone as I'm the creator. What does a diamond do? It takes light from somewhere else and shines in front of everyone. That is what Brahma says, O Lord. Everybody says, I'm the creator, Brahma the creator, but actually, originally, you are the creator. And I am receiving all light from you and shining in front of everyone as if I am the creator. Many people say Brahma is a creator. Actually, Brahma is only a secondary creator. And he is a devotee of Krishna. And we belong to the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. And we are actually worshipping Brahma as our guru. He is a spiritual master. He is not an independent god by himself. And he, in Brahma Samhita, in all the scriptures, he says, especially in Brahma Samhita, he says, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamam Bhajam. Govinda is Adi Purusham. So Brahma is also a devotee of Krishna. So though we say creation, Brahma is a creator, Brahma is only a secondary creator. How is it called secondary creator? Like you, for example, you have a shirt. The shirt is created by the tailor. But what will the tailor create if he doesn't have the cloth? The weaver becomes the primary creator and the tailor becomes the secondary creator. So the ingredients of creation were originally created by Vishnu. And then using those ingredients as a mason does, Brahma created this creation. So that is why Brahma is only a secondary creator, not primary creator. Like that, Brahma can, we can discuss so much about Brahma, we should understand Brahma is actually a devotee of Krishna. And now we'll talk about Surya. That is sun god. Sun god has been described by Brahma himself. He says, Surya is nothing but none other than the eyes of Krishna. Yachakshuresh savita sakrat grahanam raja samasta swarmurti ashesha tejaha swiyam kit prakadit brahmai ashesha tejaha. He has got ashesha teja, unlimited teja. And where is this teja coming from? Just by drawing one ray from the effulgence of Krishna, sun is glowing up the entire universe. And yasyagya brahmati samruta kala chakru. Daily the sun is rising in the east and setting in the west. By doing so, what's happening? Or one day he is being stolen. Harati. Ayur harati vaipumsanu dhyanyastam chennaso tasyarate kshanamunita uttama shloka vartaya. Every day sun rises and sets, and one day is gone. One day gone means one day near to death. The sun god is turning the wheel of time. Brahmati samrata kala chakra. Kala chakra has been turned by sun god. So, by the instruction of Krishna, sun god is trying to find. Now Krishna, what is he doing? What did he do? What did he tell Arjuna? He told Arjuna that I spoke this Bhagavad Gita first to sun god. First this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita was spoken to sun god many, many millions of years back. Imam Vivaspati Yogam Praktavan Aham Viyam Vivaswan Manvepa Murukshwati Pravit. So, sun god is a disciple of Krishna. So, in this way, we find not only these five prominent demigods whom we discussed, all the demigods, all the Devi Devatas, they are all helping Krishna in administrating this world. Now you have the Prime Minister and many ministers who are managing different departments. That one person is Krishna, under whom all the demigods, they conduct their activities. Now, after hearing this, you may ask a question. How should we relate to the demigods? What we should do to them? I have been worshipping them for so many years. What we should do? Now comes a very important point. Worship should be only to Krishna and others should be respected. That is why the Vishnu Puran says, Vishwareva sadaradhyaha sarvadeva Vishwareshwara itare brahmarudraya navigdhiha radachana. Vishnureva Sadharadhyaha. Only Vishnu, Krishna is the only object of worship. Worship is only for him and nobody else. At the same time, Navigniha Kadachana. Never disrespect the demigods because they are devotees of Krishna. They are very advanced devotees of Krishna. They are actually appointed by Krishna to administer and take care of certain departments in this world. So, worship is for Krishna, respect is for everyone, all the demigods. So, if you have been worshipping so many demigods, now you can have Krishna as Supreme Personality of the world, worship Him, and all the demigods can take it a lower position and they will be also happy. Like for example, Ganesha will be happy when you worship Krishna and read Bhagavad Gita. Lord Shiva will be happy when you worship Krishna and chant the names of Krishna. And that is how you can make the demigods also happy. Some people think, oh, if you worship only Krishna, other demigods, all the devatas, they feel bad. No, they will not feel bad, rather they will be very happy. Because they know very well why people come to them. You know why people go to them? Kama-istha-istha-jnana-prabhadhyantya-na-devata. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, all those people who have material desires, they go to demigods. Because they know, if I do this to him, they may get pleased and give. Like Lord Shiva is Ashitosh. Ashitosh means what? One who is pleased very easily. Lord Shiva is pleased very easily. That is why there is a long queue for Lord Shiva. One day comes, or some Shravan mass comes, you will find thousands of people worshipping Lord Shiva and pleasing him. And especially you find Ravana, he is a great devotee of Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva grants them boons like anything. Take, okay, go. Actually, when he grants boons to people, when they come, very easily, why does it? It is like this. Mother is cooking in the kitchen. And there is a small little girl. She wants some money to buy some toffees, some ice cream. She goes and pulls this arithmetic. Mommy, mommy, I want some money. I said, no. But sometimes she gets fed up. Okay, take it, lust. Actually, Lord Shiva is chanting. Ram, 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 Ram. And somebody comes and says, Shivaji, give me something. Give me something. Take it, lust. Take it. It is not that he is giving very happily. And this person, oh, Lord Shiva is very much pleased. Actually, he is frustrated. The demigods are actually frustrated with their devotees. They are not really happy. But what to do? There are certain laws which Vedic mantras, Vedas, they have created some laws. If they do something like that, they have to reciprocate like that. But actually even the demigods want that all people should worship Krishna. That is what the real desire of all the demigods. The real desire of Ganesha. The real desire of everyone. Now, some people say, Oji, can we worship demigods? Because we have been doing so many years, what we should do? If you really want to worship them, pray to Ganesha. Remove all the obstacles in the path of my devotion. Pray to Durga. Like gopis pray to Goddess Durga, Katyayani. Give Krishna as her husband. And you can pray to Lord Shiva. The amount of devotion, what you have to Krishna, similar devotion, please give it to me. Can worship like that. These demigods are like this. They don't want to satisfy the material desires of the devotees, but they are forced to. But Krishna is somebody like this. If you go and approach Krishna, even though you have material desires, even if you go have material desires, if you go and approach Krishna, what happens? Krishna will fulfill those material desires which are not an obstruction for your spiritual progress. Like a child goes to the father. He asks, Papa, I want a textbook, I want this, I want this, I want chocolate, I want this, and I want cigarettes. So what does the father do? He takes, oh, textbook, why not notebook? Why only one? I'll give you two. Chocolates, half kg, no, 200 grams only. Cigarettes, no way. But if a child goes to a shopkeeper and gives the list and gives the money, even though the shopkeeper doesn't want to give to the child, what? He is forced to give. That is why it is best to approach Krishna. Because he is our eternal father. Even if you have material desires, approach Krishna, no problem. Akama, sarvakamova, mokshakamudarihi, tivrena bhakti yogena yajetam purusham param. Worship Krishna with great enthusiasm. Tivrena. Even though you have material desires, you have no desires, you have all desires, you have moksha kama, desire for liberation, forget about all these things. Forget about who you are. You forget, you just worship Krishna. That is the instruction of all the scriptures. If you satisfy Krishna, everybody is satisfied. Yasmin tushte, jagat tushte. If Krishna is satisfied, the entire world is satisfied. It's a very famous story. Actually, what happened is Durvasa. You know, Durvasa is very powerful stage. Not only very powerful, he gets angry very fast. And he came to Duryodhana. Duryodhana invited Durvasa, he fed him very nicely, gave him charity. Durvasa became very pleased and told Duryodhana, yes, what blessing you want? Duryodhana told, what more blessing can be there? A sage like you, a sadhu, has come to our house with all the Brahmins. We are purified. And I want that you should, my brother should also get the same blessing. They are all in the forest. You please take all your 10,000 disciples, go there. Duryodhana told, oh, is it so? Let me go. So Duryodhana just see, even though he knew that they are in the forest, how can they feed all these 10,000? But he knew very well. Durvasa becomes angry, they are not able to feed properly. In anger, what happens? They curse. Now Durvasa went to all the 10,000 disciples. Then Yudhishthira Maharaj was there. Oh, welcome, come. Yudhishthira Maharaj, please take bath. Then please come. We will serve a nice feast for you. Yudhishthira Maharaj went in Nas Draupadi. They have all come. Go and get your Akshay Patra. And get ready. Make the feast ready. Then Draupadi told, I have already eaten. And washed the Akshay Patra. Only next day only it will bake. Now you have given a word. What to do? And at that time Krishna came. Oh, Draupadi, I am very hungry. Draupadi told, already we have a problem with 10,000 disciples of Durvasa. And you say, I am hungry. No, just see, something will be there. Draupadi told, I have washed it. No, something will be there, just get it. So she went and saw there was a small leafy vegetable which was stuck to the vessel, Akshay Patra. Then she brought, this is what it is. Then Krishna told, okay, give that. And he put it in his mouth. And Krishna told, oh, I am satisfied. My stomach is full. Then what happened? Durvasa, including all the 10,000 disciples, they felt as if they had eaten up to their throat. Now they have taken bath. Now if they go to Yudhishthira, they all felt how insulted it would be. They would have prepared a big feast. And we go there, we are not able to eat anything. So, this shows that how, and then they all run away. So this shows that how, by satisfying Krishna, everybody is satisfied. Itātara-rūpuna niśeṣena tṛpyanti skanda bhujoga śākāha. The example given. Just by nourishing the root of the tree, all the branches and the trees and of the tree, the leaves of the tree, the fruits of the tree, they all get nourished. If you try to put, if I put water only at the root, others will get dried up. Let me put some water on the fruit. Let me put some water on the leaf. No, it's foolishness. Like, you're taking food into the stomach. By taking food to the stomach, the entire body is nourished. If you think, every day I'm feeding the stomach only, what will the hands think? What will the legs think? And you try to put, some dal rice and try to apply it in the hand. And then it's foolishness. The procedure is put the food in the stomach. Naturally, all the parts of the body get nourished. The same way, just satisfy Krishna. Just nourish Krishna. Then all the demigods and everybody will be happy and nourished. You don't have to bother about what will that person think, what will this person think. Just satisfy Krishna. So, this is where we end for today. And any questions, please do ask. Yes.
Thanks for the very nice explanation. I have a question regarding the demigods and certain well-known sages who have worshipped demigods and whom we have known as liberated souls.
Yeah.
So when you said these demigods are forced to grant the materialistic needs of people.
Yeah.
So I was a little bit confused when I think about Sri Ramana Maharishi.
Yes.
He was known to have just a loincloth for the entire life. So he was praying to Arunachala.
Yeah.
And Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa, he was a beloved devotee of Durga.
Yeah.
So what was the concept behind that? I was a little bit confused to understand that completely. Because they were behind materialistic things. They were also known as liberated souls. They were close to the demigods.
Yeah. So I'll talk about both of them a little bit and give some idea about what they are. As far as Ramana Maharishi is concerned, I was not knowing much about him. Recently, I had been to Tirunavalaya, the place, and stayed right there for the year, for a day. And I purchased some books and read about him, a little bit about him. So, from my understanding about what I got about his life and books, so there, Arunachala, he worships Lord Shiva. Lord Arunachala is the place of Lord Shiva, where Lord Shiva manifested the Jyotirlinga for the first time. Now, Lord Shiva's worshippers of all three kinds. That is what scriptures talk about. One, worshippers of Lord Shiva are those who have a concept of impersonal understanding of Lord Shiva. They don't consider Lord Shiva to be a person, they consider it to be some kind of light, etc., etc. The second kind of worshippers of Lord Shiva are those who are having some material desires, they just go for desires. Third kind of worshippers of Lord Shiva are the devotees of Vishnu, of Krishna, who worship Lord Shiva as the greatest Vaishnava, because it is said in the scriptures, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that in Adi Puran, he says to Arjuna, he says, Ime bhaktasjana partha, name bhaktasta jejana, madbhaktanam che bhaktaste bhaktastamavataha. My dear Arjuna, those who are my devotees actually are not my devotees. Those who are the devotees of my devotees, they are my devotees. So those who worship Lord Shiva, considering Lord Shiva to be a devotee of Krishna, considering Lord Shiva to be a Vaishnava, they are third category worship. That in that way you can worship Lord Shiva. Like we also fast on Navratri, on Shivaratri, and worship Lord Shiva. And what is our understanding? Lord Shiva is the greatest Vaishnava. Now Ramana Maharshi comes under the category of worshipping Lord Shiva in impersonal feature. So that is what. And he practices yoga for that particular purpose. And he has a that level of understanding of Brahman means the all-pervading feature, the absolute truth, which he considers to be Lord Shiva. So we cannot consider Ramana Maharshi to be a devotee of Krishna, but definitely he has achieved some level of self-realization. We cannot say he has a realization of Bhagavan feature, the absolute truth. He has a Brahman feature of the absolute truth has been realized by him. So definitely he has got a lot of powers and renunciation. And here we should understand, having lot of powers and renunciation is not the symptom of advancement, is not the only two symptoms of advancement in self-realization. The real symptom of advancement in self-realization is how much you have love for Krishna. Ultimately, the nature of the soul is not renunciation. The nature of the soul is not some mystic powers. The nature of the soul is love, as we discussed. Isn't it? So definitely they are advanced in that particular field. When you talk about Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, he is an upasaka of Durga. And he himself has no real, he has not spoken any philosophy as such. But he generally, he preached to people that just worship Durga. And she will take care of everything, all your needs. So we say Ramakrishna Paramahamsa is upasaka of Durga. And there is no real philosophical lectures he has given or Siddhanta he has spoken anywhere. He has generally given some moral instructions and he just gave upasana of Durga, that's all. So There is no much elaborate description about it. There are some stories, some moral stories, etc. That's all. So in this way we can talk something about both of them. But as far as Bhagavad Gita is concerned, Krishna says, Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyaji mahamamaskuru. You always think of me, become my devotee, worship me. This is what Krishna has told. And we are supposed to follow this thing. That's what I can talk about. Yes.
Thanks for the enlightenment. One question which would like to get more clarity on the different incarnations of Krishna.
Yes.
And because in India, I think if you come to South, we have Lord Venkateshwara, which they say is an incarnation of Krishna in some
yes.
form. And the second question is, I frequently go to this Tirupati.
Yeah.
I see many people taking a vow and giving donations, lot of donations to Lord Vikram.
Yeah.
And you were telling about the materialistic things are taken there by the demigods. But there also we take a vow saying that if you give me this, I will give you this.
Yeah.
So these all the...
Yes.
Not,
yeah.
You can't comprehend.
So talk about Tirupati. So basic question is about Tirupati Balaji, isn't it? It's a long story about it, but just in a short cut I'll say. Tirupati Balaji, he is known as Venkateshwara. Veng means, Ven means sin, Kata means one who cuts. This is what Kata came from Sanskrit only. So one who cuts all the sins, all the miseries, Venkata. Now, many people go to him. He's actually Krishna. Venkateshwara Tirupati Balaji is Krishna. But what kind of Krishna? He is Balakrishna. But he is not Balakrishna as Bala. He is Balaji. Ji means like sir. Respectful. How can a Bala, a son, be Ji? So here comes the mood. The mood in which Balaji is present, Srinivasa or Venkateshwara is there, is known as Gaurava Vatsalya. Gaurava Vatsalya means there is motherly affection. At the same time, there is an understanding that this person is absolute truth. This person is a supreme lord. Like Yashoda, Krishna showed universal form in the mouth. Krishna killed Putra in front of Yashoda. Yashoda said, he's not my kid only. Though Krishna is showing so much of opulence, so much of power, but Yashoda's devotion for Krishna, his affection for Krishna, he is so high and pure, and it is kevala vatsalya, that her mood is not disturbed. So there, Lord Venkateshwara is standing like a child, or a young man rather, in front of Mahula Devi, manifesting this mood. So he is actually manifesting the mood of Vatsalya there. But many people go to him, expecting, I'll put some money there and I'll get this much money. And it is true, it happens also in many cases. Many, many cases it happens. As I've told, that Akamaha sarvakamova mokshakamodaradhi tivrena bhakti yogena ijetam purushampa. Not everybody in this world is desireless. Everybody has some desire or other. That is why this verse is spoken. Whether you have desire or no desire, worship Krishna. So Venkateshwara is specifically standing for those people who have desire. And at the same time, those who have only desire to serve him also. So, every deity has a particular mood. Not Balaji has this particular mood. When people worship Balaji with lot of desires, two things happen. Their desires also get fulfilled. And not only their desires get fulfilled, their desires also get vanquished. This doesn't happen to demigods. When people go with desires to demigods, what happens? Their desires may be fulfilled, but the desires will not be extinguished. But with Venkateshwara, this happens. You go with a particular desire, and he'll fulfill them and extinguishes them both. That is the speciality of Lord Venkateshwara. Of course, there are so many features which can be spoken, but this is what I can tell you at present now. So, any more questions? Yes.
I have a couple of clarifications.
Yeah.
One, how did this definition of male orientation come in? So, we spoke about six qualities which define.
Yeah.
How did the definition of a male orientation come in?
Male orientation means?
So, we refer to that Supreme Lord as He.
Ha. So male orientation.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's question number one. Question number two. During the discourse today, so there were a couple of references where we spoke about Krishna being 5,000 years before.
Yes.
And then that's how he spoke about the Bhagavad Gita. But on day one when we understood, Vyasa actually wrote the scriptures. And from there, the condensed version, which has been explained to us, is the Bhagavad Gita.
The chronology one.
Yeah, so that is something that you have spoken about.
Yeah.
So, I couldn't actually place it on the time frame.
Okay, I'll do the chronology aspect. I'll just come one by one. You can ask the third one also. Right. Your first one is about the male aspect of it. See, when you think of male, generally we have an idea of some male and female in this world. But actually, whatever you see in this world, whether it is male or female, whether it is neutral gender like this, all are female. They're all prakriti. We think I am a male because I have a mustache in a particular kind of form. A female thinks I am a female. It is actually neither female, the soul is neither female nor male. It is all prakriti. Prakriti means female. Or energy of God. And Krishna, he is the only male because he is only Purusha. There is Purusha and Prakriti. Purusha means energetic and Prakriti means energy. The whole world, material world, is energy of Krishna. Matter is energy of Krishna. And we as souls are also energy of Krishna. So we are all Prakriti, we are all female. There is only one Purusha, there is only one enjoyer. Purusha means enjoyer. So Krishna is the only enjoyer. And all are Prakriti. The problem is that we think I am Purusha. I am enjoyer. And that is where all the problem starts. To think that I am male. Oh, she is female. No, everybody is female. Everybody is Prakriti. Every object is Prakriti. There is only one Purusha, it is Krishna. So this is the understanding. That is why we say He, because He is the only Purusha. Now, for this, you give a small example. Lord Ramachandra was passing through Dandakaranya. At the time, many sages were doing tapasya. When they saw Lord Ramachandra, they became so attracted to the beauty, they told, "We want to marry you." Is this? Ramachandra is male and they are rishis in a male body. But these rishis had madhurya towards the Supreme Lord. So, this is a very confusing aspect in Ramayana. That itself is a proof that just having a male body doesn't mean you are a male. The only male is Krishna, the Supreme Lord. That is why he addresses He. Now, your second question is about the chronology of Bhagavad Gita. Now, how Vyasa wrote it. I just used the word 5,000 years back. What happened is, Vyasa, Mahabharata was the later writings of Vyasa. The last work of Vyasa was Srimad. And before that, he had written the Vedanta Sutras, and before that, he had written the Mahabharata. So, this happened after the entire Mahabharata got over. how it is like this. Mahabharata is a writing of Vyasa, but this writing of Vyasa he did based on the conversation between Janmejaya and Vaishampayana. That is why if you have heard Vishnu Sahasram, it says Vaishampayana Vacha, it comes. The entire Mahabharata, which was written by Vyasa, he wrote it as Vaishampayana had told to Janmejaya. Who is Janmejaya? Parikshit's
grandson.
Grandson? Son or
son?
Son. I think Parikshit's son. Son or grandson, whoever it may be. So it is already after the entire Mahabharata war got over. After Parikshit, this conversation happened between Janmejaya and Vaishampayana. And that was recorded by Vyasa. When you say 100-200 years span, it had happened. Isn't it? So it is not just exactly, you know, before or after or something like that. So this is the idea. Your third question.
Third question is, I understand that Krishna in Mahabharata is an incarnation of the Supreme God. It's my understanding, right? The Supreme God.
Okay. As I told in today's class, some people have some idea that God is some power, some energy. Isn't it?
Supreme Lord.
Yeah, supreme power, supreme energy. But we discussed, energy is never independent. Energy, behind every energy, there is energetic. So, to see God as our supreme energy only, it is limited understanding of God. The ultimate understanding of God is to understand that there is some person who possesses that energy. Isn't it? So, Krishna is a person who possesses that supreme energy. He is a possessor of that energy. So, in the Mahabharata Krishna, he personally appeared. And all the energy is under his control. That is how we should understand. Any more questions? Yes.
I
knew some question would come. Intentionally, I leave this subject for questions. Especially in South India, we have this thing. When we talk about incarnation, they say there is one Vishnu. He comes as Varaha, goes back. Vatsya, he goes back. Urma, he goes back. He comes as Narasimha, he goes back. So he considered Vishnu took 10 incarnations. But this is a general understanding. But actually, who is Vishnu? Which Vishnu are we referring to? There are three Vishnus. Karanodakshya Vishnu, Garbhodakshya Vishnu, Kshirodakshya Vishnu. Not only that, these three Vishnus, their purpose is creation of this world. Now, the real meaning of Vishnu is Vishati Naha Iti Vishnu. The person who cannot be stopped entering anywhere, that means who is all pervading. Is Rama not all pervading? Narasimha not all pervading? So, every Vishnu Tattva is addressed as Vishnu. It is just like we are all humans, isn't it? In the same way, Rama, Narasimha, Vana, they are all addressed as Vishnu. But in reality, Krishna is the source of all incarnations. What is the proof? We all know there is something called Dashavatara Stotra. You must have seen Dashavatara Stotra being played on the Bharatanatyam stage. In the Dashavatara Stotra, you will find that in every stanza, Keshavadrita Meena Sharira Jai Jagadishare, Keshavadrita Kurma Sharira Jai Jagadishare, Keshavadrita Narahari Rupa Jai Jagadishare, Keshavadrita Rama Sharira Jai Jagadishare, Keshavadrita Haladar Rupa Jai Jagadishare, Keshavadrita Dashavida Rupa Jai Jagadishare. Who is that Keshava? Krishna. And more surprisingly, in the less of 10 incarnations, In the list of 10 incarnations, Krishna's name is not there. Krishna's name is not there in the 10 incarnations list. In some places and some temples you may see, but Krishna's name is not there in the list of 10 incarnations. Jayadeva Goswami is the authority for it. Why Krishna's name is not in the 10 incarnations? Because it's not just incarnation, it's incarnator. Though he is the incarnator and all the incarnations, still all are same. The example is that of during Deepavali time, what we do? We keep all the lamps in one line. Take one lamp and light all the lamps and keep the lamp next to the lamp. You find all look the same, isn't it? Yes, all are same. Tattva, all are same. But there is one lamp which lit all the lamp. That is Krishna. So there is no difference between Krishna and Rama. There is no difference between Krishna and Narasimha. But still, Krishna is considered to be the incarnator and all are incarnations. They are all on the same platform. You can worship Narasimha and Vamana. You can worship Kurma. You can worship any of the incarnations. They are all the same.